The Blue Cliff Record, Case 46, Jing Ching's Voice of Raindrops. The pointer. With a single stroke, he completes it and passes beyond ordinary and holy. His slightest word can break things up, untying what is bound and releasing what is stuck. As if walking on thin ice or running over sword blades, he sits within the heaps of sound and form. He walks on top of sound and form. For the moment, I leave aside wondrous functioning in all directions. How is when he leaves that very instant? To test, I'm citing this old case. Look. Jing Ching asked the monk, "What is that sound outside?" "The sound of rain dripping," replied the monk. Jing Ching said, "Ordinary people are upside down, falling into delusion about themselves and pursuing outside objects." "What about yourself, Your Reverence?" asked the monk. Jing Ching said, "I am on the brink of falling into delusion about myself." The monk asked, "What do you mean on the brink of falling into delusion about yourself?" Jing Ching said, "To attain the world of emptiness may not be so difficult, but to express the bare substance is hard." The verse, an empty hall. The sound of raindrops. Hard to respond, even for an adept. If you say he's ever let the streams enter, as before, you still don't understand. Understanding or not understanding. On South Mountain, on North Mountain, more and more downpour. This is a very... It's a very sweet koan, it feels to me. There's a kind of gentle openness here, gentle spirit of collaboration. Jing Ching asks, "What is that sound outside?" What is that sound? What is this sound? What is this? This practice of really meeting this is so essential. There's a great story about featuring one of our lineage ancestors, George's teacher, Sung San, and there's a conference. I forget the theme of the conference, but Sung San was there, and a very high Tibetan Lama, Kalu Rinpoche, was there. And at lunchtime or something, when they were eating, there was an orange, you know, served with the lunch. And Sung San picked up the orange, turned to Kalu Rinpoche, and said, "What is this? What is this? What is this?" And Kalu Rinpoche turned to his translator and said, "Do they not have oranges in Korea?" So here, Ching Ching is asking, "What is that sound outside?" And the monk says, "Oh yeah, that thing over there, that sound outside, what's going on there is actually, that's the rain dripping." Dogen says, there's a subtle difference between allowing the 10,000 things to approach and sending the self out, the knowing self out after them. He says, when the self goes out to meet the 10,000 things, that is delusion. But when the 10,000 things advance and affirm the self, that is practice enlightenment. This practice of zazen is our practice of allowing the inner and outer 10,000 things to meet us, receiving them, entrusting ourselves to this bare substance of thusness. Jing Ching says, ordinary people are upside down, falling into delusions about themselves and pursuing outside objects. We get confused as to the nature of this endeavor. We get confused about thinking it is our practice, our zazen, our enlightenment, or that rain, that orange. Falling into delusion about themselves and pursuing outside objects. What about yourself, Your Reverence? Asked the monk. And I love this line. Jing Ching says, yeah, I am on the brink of falling into delusion about myself. I am on the brink of falling into delusion about myself. I really appreciate this brink and this honoring of the razor's edge quality of this practice. It's so easy to fall into a story. It's so easy to conclude, I understand, I don't understand. This is it. This can't be it. I'm okay. I'm not okay. This is mine. This is not mine. We are always on this brink. And often we're on the other side of the brink. One other translation of this is I am almost not confused by self. And I really appreciate the way that that comes from the other side of this brink. Fallen off the brink. I almost didn't fall off this brink. I'm almost not confused by this self that arises for me and seems so substantive, so real, so truth-bearing. I'm almost not confused. And this, I really appreciate the way this opens the door to meeting our confusion. Meeting our delusions about ourself. You know, and as we heard in the recitation during the sutra service today about delusion, these aren't a fixed thing we try to remove. And in fact, those who greatly realize delusion are Buddhas. I am on the brink of falling into delusion about myself. The monk asks, what do you mean you're on the brink of falling into delusion about yourself? What do you mean you're almost not confused by self? And Jing Ching responds here in a way that, he's not busting out his Zen. He's not engaging in Dharma combat. He's not trying to one-up or prove anything to himself or the monk here. And he acknowledges a fundamental truth about this practice, this tradition, this setup of teachers and students that those old troublemakers, Shakyamuni and Bodhidharma, handed down to us. Jing Ching says, to attain the world of emptiness may not be so difficult, but to express the bare substance is hard. So difficult to speak about. So difficult to explain. So easy, even to ourselves. So easy to fall into delusions, to fall into stories, to fall into doubt, to fall into certainty. To express the bare substance. And this is what we are, this is our practice of simply showing up. Entrusting ourselves to this bare substance that is always, always, always expressing itself. Doesn't need us. Entrusting ourselves to it is expressing the bare substance. Zazen is expressing the bare substance. Ordinary mind itself, too, is expressing the bare substance. The invitation is to let all of this be as it is, to let it be simple, to let it be thus. And even this let, too much effort, too much doing, too much manufacture, just the bare substance. In the pointer to this, it says, as if walking on thin ice or running over sword blades, he sits on the heaps of sound and form. And this is, in a certain way, what opening our mouth to speak about the Dharma is like. It reminds me of a verse from the Gateless Gate in which Master Mumon says, we must wear the iron yoke with no hole, this business of practicing Zen. It is not a slight matter. This curse passes to descendants. This curse passed on to us by Shakyamuni, Mahakashapa, Bodhidharma, Sungsan. This curse passes to descendants. Master Mumon does this thing with words where he often seems to be insulting or disparaging or negatively casting something. But it's just the opposite. This curse for which we're all so grateful. If you want to support the gate and sustain the house, you must climb a mountain of swords with bare feet. Running across the sword's edge, climbing the mountain of swords. Sitting on the head of a pin. And this is our practice. This is our practice of intimacy. This is our practice of thusness. The verse to this case says, as before, if you say he's ever let the streams enter, as before, you still don't understand. Understanding or not understanding, on South Mountain, on North Mountain, more and more downpour. Understanding arises as understanding. Not understanding arises as not understanding. It is always thus. One of those is not good, and one of them is not bad. Dogen comments on this case, and he says, released from the self, what is the sound outside the gate? As for deluding the self or not deluding the self, which is difficult or which is easy, I leave completely to you. As for chasing after things or not chasing after things, are they upside down or not upside down? difficult, difficult, difficult. Easy, easy, easy. Just this. Just this chirping. Just these breaths. What is this? And to further express the bare substance, I invite David to clarify what I've muddled.
So this invitation to intimacy, this invitation to the world beyond our self, the self creates the world. Gregory Bateson said, "The mind creates the world and then says, 'I didn't do it.'" The world appears to be outside of us, appears to be a stage or something that we live on. We try to learn the rules, we try to get more of what we want and less of what we don't want. And we try all kinds of strategies, including Zazen, to get more for the self. All of these efforts fortunately fail. This failure of the self is the entry point of our practice. As long as we're clear and intact and understand what's going on, we are lost in delusion. Perfectly encapsulated in this world, in the phantoms of our mind that are so fierce and so compelling. We are desperate to escape. And we are terrified to let go. All of us indeed are on the brink. So we come together to sit on the brink, to be at the edge of our life. And we can wonder where this edge is, and we can be sure in our minds that it is somewhere else, and maybe this afternoon I'll get there. I hope this afternoon. If not this afternoon, then tonight. I think there's a good chance for me. This fundamental delusion that there is somewhere else, that there is something else that we hope or we move toward. And Josh's wonderful opening, such a kind and sweet opening of this koan, of this gentle exchange. This exchange of self and other, teacher and student, me and you, subject and object. This is the miraculous functioning he speaks of in the pointer. This miraculous functioning that is happening, that is our life. There is no life outside of this. and the lovely encouragement of the teacher, that perhaps we don't have to go somewhere else. Perhaps we don't have to be someone else. And that here, moving through realms of understanding and misunderstanding, moving through realms of spaciousness and contraction, this is the great life. This is the mysterious orange that we can never describe. Any description, and we miss the juiciness, the nourishment, the sweetness of this brief life, the liveliness of sadness, the liveliness of anger, the liveliness of joy, the liveliness of dullness. Our practice is not moving out, not being someone new, not becoming something we call enlightened, but to practice simply, returning again and again, coming back to what we have never been separated from. Coming to look, to consider, to be curious about this suchness, this ache in the shoulders, this mind on fire, this boredom. We sit in the middle of the 10,000 things. And when we, and as we take this backward step into who we have always been, we find the whole world comes to us. The whole world is kindly bent to ease us. And there is no need or no possibility of believing this. One of the most wonderful things about our way is that this is about you. This is about finding out for yourself. So wonderful, this tradition, these teachings, and yet of no consequence at all. All of these stories, all of these words, simply to suggest the possibility that your very life may be what you've been looking for. That nothing has ever been held back. Here it is. Thank you. So I invite you to sit comfortably, and if you'd like, people behind the fireplace, if you'd like to move over to be able to see better, hear better, you're welcome to do that. We'll move into our Dharma dialogue, which is an opportunity for you to come forward from your experience with what touched you in our words, in the story, and with questions.
So, among, this is sort of like taking a drink from a fire hose, this Teisho. But one of the little drops that I caught was what Josh had to say about effort. This is important to me because it takes effort on my part. So I think that it's been my experience that my tendency is to just be a lazy guy and not do the practice. It's just easier not to do that. So what I'd like to ask Josh is the effort that it takes sometimes just to go and sit, is that delusion?
So, in a certain sense, yes, in a certain sense, that effort is also real. And what's important here is not to imagine that the thing you're making an effort to do is to get towards, to have, to change, to not believe that story. But this practice is of utmost importance to show up and do this practice of nowhere to get to, nothing to strive for. And I just want to add a caution to not make zazen in your mind synonymous with practice. Zazen is one way we express the bare substance, but practice needs to include all of our life on the cushion, not on the cushion, amid delusion and stories, seeing delusion and stories as delusion as stories. So, please keep practicing this practice of you can't do this practice.
And I'd like to add another caution to this, to watch the tendency of the selfing mind to create a lazy self and an efforting self, because we all do that, and that's the deepest delusion of all. I think we set up conditions for practice, and then practice takes over. We're not really doing anything, and we need to see through I, me, and mine over and over and over. I can use this as an example. Having a cold or having this virus, I had to go to the doctor to get it checked out. You know, that was efforting. And the doctor told me to go to the drugstore and buy these certain things. And then the rest of it is totally outside of my control. Totally. And I think practice is like that too. We make a big effort to come to Sashin. Even if we think we're lazy, we got here. And everybody here. And then we set up these conditions. And then something happens. What David was referring to, this quality of reality, which is so kind, even though sometimes it seems really mean, giving us sore throats and colds and aging us and killing us. It does seem kind of mean. But how lucky we are to be able to be here right now in this moment, to lean back into life without making categories.
I'm reminded of Kate Hartland, one of our Denkai teachers, in a Dharma talk she gave once that stays with me. She says, we always do the easiest thing. And for some of us, the easiest thing is to come to Sesshin, because it's so difficult not to. And we sit because it's too painful not to sit. Easy, difficult, hard to know.
Thank you, Steve.
I felt what Josh was talking about in terms of the gentleness of the exchange in its rhythms and in the way that the teacher stayed with the student. But it didn't all sound gentle to me. And especially the way that the reply started out where he said, and I can't quote exactly, but something close to, yeah, ordinary people get things upside down. You know, if I say to a student, yeah, you've got that upside down, it's actually not going to make the student happy. It's like saying, I'm sorry, you have to start all over again. You know, you're completely wrong. So what's this upside down? I want to hear more about the upside downness of what the student said.
Yeah. Yeah, well, isn't it? I mean, I'm coming to Sesshin to fix things. Yeah. I mean, it's a noble goal. You know, I've got some problem. I've got, you know, and we have our problems, and we arrive here, and then I think the litany of I'll get it this afternoon, you know, this evening. Well, maybe it'll be tomorrow. We're constantly telling. I love stories. I mean, stories are what we're woven out of stories, and somehow we need to find our way to turn that upside down. And the gift is that this practice, it's like, you know, the whole little Shohaku Okamura invitation is that we begin thinking we're being instrumental. And then we discover we're not actually coming to do Sesshin. We're coming to come. We're doing Sesshin to do Sesshin. We're anticipating awakening. Each moment begins to open up, to unfold, to present itself. And that turning over just happens by itself. It's just there. But what we're invited into constantly is to notice the raindrops, to notice the bird, to notice each other, to notice the floor, to notice the next step. And then everything is flipped, everything is turned. One more time. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, Pierce.
What I appreciated about your two teachers is that you simplified it. In a sense, you pulled the rug from under me, because when I hear koan I haven't heard before, I'm looking for something that I can take with me into my practice. And there are lots of phrases in the chanting book, for example, that I have used for a certain period of time. And then they become meaningless, actually, because it's just something that's intervening between me and those raindrops. So in the way in which you presented the koan, both of you, you kind of pull the rug out from that. I mean, I think maybe that's the intent of the koan. And also, I appreciated the reminder, which is also in Okamura's reading, to forget about Zazen as a personal project. I mean, you know, this is part of coming to Sesshin for me, that I'm doing this, and I'm going to work at it, and it is my project. But it isn't. That's not where it's at. So I really appreciate the. I'm left with nothing
to proceed to the next period of Ozazen.
Yes.
That's appropriate. So thank you.
Yeah. Get rid of that.
That too.
And not to undervalue those other practices, the way you've been helped and guided by the teachings of the ancestors, and not to conclude that those are problems. All of this teaching, the Buddha says all of this teaching is like a raft to get us to the other shore, to get us to the other side. And when we get to the other side, we need to be able to put it down, not cling on to that story we're telling ourselves about even where here is. But there is value in reflecting deeply on these teachings. That's why we recite them, why we chant them, but not to make that into a thing.
So the line that really touched me was the one about, I'm on the brink. And it moved me for a couple of reasons. One is, I think it comes right after the part where he says, well, some people get this, it kind of sounds like he's saying, well, some of us who are really enlightened don't get this confused, right? And then he says, me too, you know. And so human, what I heard was so human, this thing that we do, you know, these stories we tell ourselves, this making stuff up, making our world, you know, making it all up. And then the other thing I heard was in that so human was and not something to be gotten rid of. And this morning in the sutra service when we were chanting the Gatha of Atonement, I kept the words that kept coming up for me was the last line, which in my head I keep hearing, in my heart I keep hearing it, now I'm at one with them all. Right? And I don't have to cut out those pieces of myself to try to become some perfect Laura. You know, like it's not delusion, like, oh, bad, get rid of that, you know, gosh, I'd be busy just trying to get rid of all of them. And what I heard in this, I'm on the brink, was like, right, on the brink. That's it too. Nowhere else to go. Thank you.
I want to tell a story of my teacher who I traveled with a lot for many, many years in Korea, and he really mixed it up with all different kinds of people. He had students who were from every, you know, all of the six realms, and one of them was a pickpocket. It had been a pickpocket, a professional thief, and he was also a very sincere Zen practitioner. I was getting on the bus one day with him and Sansanim, and he said it was all he could do, you know, not to reach for the... And so there we were on the bus, and he forgot himself, and his hand was reaching for the back. Someone had them in their Levi's. You know how some guys keep those wallets there? And then I saw him look over at me and look at Sansanim, and we all burst out laughing.
There we are.
Almost not confused.
Thank you.